We hear a lot of perspectives on the Mankind podcast. Inclusion of a guest is not an endorsement of their views, and the opinions expressed here do not always represent the mission or values of the Mankind Project USA.
Looks like the rain has gone.
Hey, everybody, it's Boysen Hodgson. Welcome back to the Mankind Podcast, the podcast where we are setting out show on show to prove that there is indeed more than one way to be a man. Today, this is going to be a really cool conversation. I'm excited to be in the room with Jennifer Ramirez Salarte. Well, first of all, say hi, Jennifer.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for having me.
Jennifer Ramirez Salarte is the founder and executive director of an organization out of Chicago called And Rise Women, Inc., a.k.a. And Rise. And Rise and Jennifer support female trauma and abuse survivors, sexual abuse, mental abuse, domestic violence, emotional abuse, to heal and thrive. She's an entrepreneur. She's a published author of Passion, Purpose, and the Pursuit of Dreams, a keynote speaker, a survivor, and a thriver herself. And Rive strives to empower female survivors of trauma and abuse to become the ultimate versions of themselves, no matter what adversities they've faced. Through And Rise, Jennifer provides resources, services, group events, individual counseling, trauma healing, and trauma recovery, as well as mental health recovery. And Rise is based in Chicago, but the women's groups and programs that it is running support female survivors through in-person and virtual events across the United States. Jennifer has a business and entrepreneurial background, as well as a number of other certifications. We'll probably touch on some of that for working with trauma and abuse survivors. She lives in Chicago with her newly minted husband, three kids, and a pit bull named Midnight. Welcome, Jennifer. Thank you for coming here.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me. I'm excited.
So the first thing that I want to start out with saying is that we frame this conversation every once in a while so today we are going to be talking about women survivors. We are going to be talking about women's empowerment, women's healing, women's trauma, women's support, and you're on the Mankind Podcast. So listeners out there, this is not a zero-sum game. Helping women helps all of us. And that's where we're going to start. I in doing some background for the show, I just went and got some of the domestic violence statistics that are out there. And I'm just going to read a couple and look in the show notes down below for the links where I got these. On average, nearly 20 people a minute are physically abused by an intimate partner in the United States. In a year, this equates to more than 10 million women. One in four women and one in nine men experience severe intimate partner physical violence, intimate partner contact sexual violence, or intimate partner stalking, with impacts such as injury, fearfulness, post-traumatic stress, use of victim services, contraction of sexually transmitted diseases, etc. Yeah, read some of the stuff that's here. And the first question, Jennifer, that I wanted to bring is, what do you think our communities and businesses and our society is losing or missing when women don't get the support and resources they need from an organization like yours?
Yeah, so actually, that's actually a big problem. A lot of people don't even go to the police. Those are numbers based on people who have reported. So think about all the people who don't report because there's not a lot of trust within, you know, the system, right? The justice system and police and people reaching out for help. A lot of times I hear women go to get an order of protection or they call the cops, right? When they're getting scared and then the cops just tell them, sorry, there's nothing we can do. We can't give you an order of protection or you don't have enough evidence. How do I know that you're not lying? You know, they victim blame them. And so then these women never will call again and they will just take more abuse and more abuse. So I know we were kind of talking about this before we started the call about how this really affects the whole society. Domestic and sexual violence doesn't just affect the household that it's happening in or the person or the individual that it's happening to. It affects everybody because it does affect our economy as well, because some of these women need services. They need housing, right? They use the justice system to try to fight their abusers in court, and then that takes resources away from that. So, and then also, like, think about, like, women are caretakers to their children, or whoever, even caretakers to their parents and things like that. So when they're not doing well, how can they caretake those children? And then those children go and they're seeing things that are happening, you know, behind closed doors. And then, you know, the cycles continue, right? If they see domestic violence in the home, then more than likely those kids are going to go to school and they're going to treat kids the same way that they see dad treating mom, right? So, like, that's just that vicious cycle that people don't understand. And I hate to say it like this too, but men really don't think that it's, like, their problem, but it is. And the bigger reason why I say that is because all men are related to women or have some type of, right? They have a mother, they have a sister, they have aunts, they have daughters, right? So, like, you heard the numbers. It happens to 1 in 4 women. So that means it's going to happen to one of the women you know in your life. Even if they don't tell you, it's statistically going to happen, unfortunately. So, yeah, and when people don't get the help, then the cycle just continues, and then it just continues through generations until somebody stops that cycle. So that's why I am really open about sharing my story and letting people know, ask for help. It's okay. I understand there's a lot of guilt and shame associated with domestic violence and with sexual violence. You know, people are really embarrassed to tell anybody about it. But, you know, unfortunately, it happens way more often than it should. So, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm thinking back to the first time that you and I spoke, just diving into the kinds of work that you get into in your programming, and the fact that so many, we lose the gifts. We lose the gifts and the purpose and the gold and the brilliance of powerful women when we are not creating communities in a society that calls this out and does something about it and changes the situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So, yeah. So if you don't mind sharing, I would love for our listeners to hear some of your story.
Yeah, sure. So I am a survivor of childhood sexual abuse from my father. And then I grew up being taught to keep my abuse a secret. Nobody needs to know. It's the family business. It stays in our household. Nobody needs to know. So I grew up with that mentality to protect my parents who didn't protect me. And then, so I had no boundaries. I didn't even know that saying no was an option because I was never given that option. So that was the first issue to begin with. I had no conflict resolution skills. So, like, when I became an adult, it was hard for me to deal with conflict and things like that. Not just an adult, but, like, throughout my whole life, I was always a people pleaser, scared to make people upset. I always wanted people to, like, stay in my corner, right? Like, abandonment issues and things like that. Fast forward to when I was an adult, I became a single mom at the age of 21. As soon as I told him I was pregnant, he took off. So I was on my own physically, financially, emotionally, mentally. It was really, really hard. I also lived in a really rough neighborhood in Chicago because that's all I could afford at the time. So there was drugs and gangs and shootings like almost every day. And I was $25,000 in credit card debt. I was living paycheck to paycheck. And I was like, that was when I really hit rock bottom. Didn't have a lot of support from my family either, like help with my daughter. So those were really, really rough years. And, you know, that was when I really hit rock bottom. And I was like, how the hell did this become my life? Like, how did this, like, I never envisioned this to happen, you know? And I just knew that that's not the life that I wanted to live. And that's especially not what I wanted for my daughter. I didn't want her to grow up like that. So I still was in toxic relationships, but that, like, in that point, I knew I wanted something better, but I didn't know how to do it, you know? So then fast forward to when I'm in my last, like, abusive relationship. He was very financially abusive. The physical abuse was starting to get worse. He was very, very narcissistic and emotionally abusive, verbally abusive, like, just would tell me all types of crazy things. And I thought that this man was better than me because I had such low self-worth that, like, I just felt like I had to do anything and everything that he wanted in order to keep him happy. So like I lost who I was in that relationship. Like by the end, by the time I got out of it, I didn't even know who I was anymore. I didn't even know the things I liked because I had been so like determined to make sure that I was keeping this man happy. Because if he wasn't happy, then I was going to suffer. My kid was going to see us fight, and the fights would last for hours and they would get really bad sometimes. So I would do everything in my power to make sure he was happy. And so I lost myself. I didn't even do anything I liked anymore because it was always about him. Everything he wanted to do, didn't matter what I wanted anymore. It was just always about him until, you know, we had a really bad fight and it got physical. And he came to me later that night and he was just like, what do you have to say for yourself? As if like I was the one that did something crazy. I won't get into the whole story, but I can if you want. But anyway, and then that's just the moment when I realized like this man does not respect you. Like he thinks you're a joke. Those are the two things that came to my mind when I was having that conversation with him. And then I told him that night, I was like, you need to leave. You need to just go with to your mom's house or to your parents' house for the night. And really, that was my intention. I thought that when he went to his parents' house that, you know, I'd miss him the next day and I'd be like, come back, let's work it out. But that first night that I was alone in my house, like with my daughter, it was so peaceful. I hadn't felt that peace in my own home in years. And I was like, whoa. And then every day that passed that he wasn't around, it was like, I was just soaking in that peace. And I was like, I don't even know if I want to be with this person anymore. And then basically a week later, I just decided, I'm like, yeah, I don't think we're going to be back together. And things like that. So like that was really, unfortunately, I went through a lot of really tough things with that man. But also that was also the relationship that finally made me realize my worth. Like it finally made me realize like I deserve so much better than what I'm getting. And why am I like settling for these people? So then I started counseling, and counseling honestly changed my life. It helped me see my value. It helped me work through a lot of trauma that I hadn't worked through or processed or accepted. And, you know, just all the things that I had been through, not just with like that man, but with like my family, the sexual abuse and other types of domestic violence that I'd been through in the past. And it really helped me so much. And then so fast forward a little bit more, I finished college. I started investing in real estate. I started an Airbnb business. And so in 2019, I wanted to just like tell women about my story and show them like, look, I come from nothing, no money, family doesn't have money, but look what I've created. I've created this for myself. And I just wanted to share that with them. And I like completely fell in love with that. I started out of my living room for fun, just as like a passion, something that I enjoyed doing. And then in 2020, I quit my full-time job and I pursued AndRise full-time. And here we are today, 4 years later, it's grown immensely. And yeah, I just love doing this work. And I honestly feel like so blessed to be able to do it and to have the strength to do it every day and to be able to grow it and to be able to make it through COVID. And there's a lot of things that I'm thankful for today, you know, because the path hasn't always been easy. But that's why I share so openly, because I just want other people to know, like, no matter what you've been through, like, you can overcome it and you can be that ultimate version of yourself, no matter what that looks like. It looks different for everybody, but you know, just sharing that message, because I think it's important.
I want to go backwards just a tiny bit to the kind of moment of clarity and a couple of things that I heard you say. He thinks I'm a joke. He doesn't respect me. And is there kind of that the point where you recognized, if I don't start respecting myself, then who's going to?
At that point, I hadn't thought that way. I'll be honest. It was more just like, I knew that I deserved better. Cause I was like, I'm a great mom. I'm a great person. I work my butt off. Like I'm going to school. I'm trying to be something. I'm trying to make something of myself. I don't like, you know, I'm not a mean person. Like, I'm like, I have a lot of really great qualities. And like, I'm good looking, you know, like I'm in my prime right now. That's what I thought back then. That was like in, you know, my early 30s. So I was just like, I'm a great catch. Like, why is he treating me like this? Like, I know that I'm great and there'd be plenty of guys that would love to be with me, you know? And that was more of what I was thinking. Now I think more in the sense of like my self-worth and that type of stuff, but I wasn't thinking like that at that point yet.
Inherent worth, inherent value. Thank you. And then the next question that I had is, how did you figure out that you could get access? I want to talk about accessibility of services. So what was that experience like for you? And when you first said, okay, I need help, I'm going to go look for help.
Yeah. So I actually was in a couples counseling with him, and obviously that didn't work out well, but I did continue to see that therapist after, you know, me and him broke up and everything. So she kind of knew, she didn't know the whole situation while we were in it. Cause I, at that time, I didn't even know about, I knew about physical abuse, but I didn't know about emotional abuse, financial abuse, verbal. I hadn't even no idea that that even existed. So I didn't even know. And she didn't tell me that either. Maybe she didn't know, but I definitely knew there was something wrong. So then when I started telling her about like everything that I hadn't told her during our joint sessions, she's like, oh yeah, like that's not right. And you know, he shouldn't have treated you like that. And wow, that's a lot. And that's when I finally started unpacking my childhood sexual abuse. And she was like, whoa, it was a lot. Cause I think I like just kind of spewed it all out, but I think I needed to. And in that, it allowed me to just have that space to get it out and feel like safe to do so with her. And it really helped me so much because I was taught to not talk about it. We don't do that. We don't talk about these things, you know, it's the family business. And so there was a lot of guilt and shame around talking about it until I started doing it. And I was like, wow, this feels good to get it out and talk about these things that have been a secret for most of my life, honestly.
Thank you. Let's break that down a little more so that we're not kind of talking about things without really describing them. So I understand what physical abuse looks like in a particular way, but let's break down for the listeners, like physical abuse, emotional abuse, financial abuse. What's the spectrum of what these things look like?
Yeah. So physical is kind of the obvious things, right? Black eyes, bruises, punching, hitting, but also something that happened to me that I also didn't know was considered physical abuse was like, I called it the cat and mouse game where like I would try to leave and they would prevent you from going into the bathroom or leaving the house, block the door. That is physically blocking you from being free to go wherever you want. And I didn't know that that was a form of physical abuse too. And that happened to me a lot. Like I would try, like when arguments would get bad, I would try to run out the door to like leave the house and I would be prevented. And then I'd run to the back door and then they'd block the back door. And then I'd run to the, you know, and it was just like cat and mouse, like kind of playing with you, like, you know, and it feels like really crappy to be in your own house and not be able to escape, right? So that's just something else to think about. Another thing pertaining to physical abuse is if it hasn't happened yet, some warning signs that it could happen are throwing things, punching walls or punching things or whatever, destroying your things. Because this is the thing, abusers know what they're doing. So it's usually if they're breaking things, it's usually not their own stuff. It's usually yours. Yes. and people don't really know about that stuff. So that's a little bit about physical. And then verbal is, you know, name calling, insults, things like that. Like, you know, kind of like even lying to you too, saying you'll never find anybody like me or nobody will ever love you like I will. You know, just kind of that manipulation that can get you thinking like, oh, well, I'll just stay because he's right. Like nobody's ever going to love me like he will. And I've been told that too. Nobody's ever going to love you the way I do. And nobody's ever going to treat you like this. And I'm like, God, I hope not because this is terrible. emotional abuse is obviously more like the manipulation, like narcissism, gaslighting, you know, like just doing things like that to kind of make you believe that you're crazy or make you believe that you're too emotional, right? Like for just saying how you feel about something. Everybody has feelings and it's okay in a healthy relationship to be able to tell your partner, hey, I'm feeling like this, or this doesn't make me feel comfortable, or it made me sad or mad when you did this, and being able to have a normal adult conversation. Sorry, I'll work on that. But when somebody's like, no, I didn't, or no, it's just you, you're just too emotional, or you're just too much, or, you know, then making you feel like, you know, your feelings aren't valid. That's, you know, another sign. And then now like into financial abuse, it can look a lot of different ways. It can be you working and the person taking all of your money. They could say, just take your whole paycheck, or it can be them choosing not to work and not to contribute to the household. It can be them taking out loans in your name, credit cards in your names, ruining your credit card or your credit. it could be physically taking money out of your purse or taking money out of your safe or whatever, you know, like actual physically like taking money, or things like that. You know, I know I've been through financial abuse where they didn't want to work. They weren't contributing. They weren't helping. There was another instance where my ex was supposed to be paying the assessments every month for the condo and he didn't pay them for 6 months. So then I got a letter from a lawyer saying, hey, you're at risk of losing your condo if you don't pay the assessments, because that's what's in your bylaws, right, for your condo association. And he'd never told me that he hadn't paid it. So like we were behind, I don't know how many, like a couple thousand of dollars. And I was very upset because I was like, what have you been doing with all your money? And why did you decide that you didn't want to tell me about this? You know, so things like that, not paying bills, not taking care of financial responsibilities, or, you know, using their own money for their own stuff, or also having the person on like a budget, right? So they're only giving their partner $10 a week to live on, right? And I've heard that, or not giving them money at all, even their own money that they are making at their job. So those are all different like forms of like financial abuse. And yeah, a lot of people don't know that that's a form of abuse and domestic abuse, and it is.
Thank you. That is super helpful. And next I'll go to the question that comes up so much that I'm guessing you have a really good answer. Why doesn't she just leave him?
It's a great question. And yes, that's always one that I hear too. So again, going back to the justice system, right? So when she calls for help and when the cops say, sorry, there's nothing we can do, or nope, we can't grant you an order of protection. Some of these women think, well, I'll just rather stay with him, that, you know, like the justice system says it's not bad, so it must not be bad. So I'll just stay, you know, or the justice, or like the cops are never going to help me, so I might as well stay. Or, you know, financial reasons. Sometimes these men, and I'm not saying that men are the only abusers, but in our case, right, we work with women. So that's why I'm referring to men as the abusers, because women could be abusers too. But thinking like, so that this person has all the money, he makes all the money, he's the breadwinner, he doesn't let me work, so I don't have any way to escape even if I wanted to, you know. And a lot of these people do, a lot of these women do want to leave, but they just don't have the financial means to go find a new place. And as you know, like just the cost of living these days is freaking crazy. So like the options are even more limited now. And, you know, housing is an issue and even women's shelters are full, you know, so it's hard for people to just get up and go, especially when they have kids. Another reason too is they're being coerced by their abuser that like, you know, and being love bombed, right? Like there's that whole cycle of abuse, right? Like, love bombing, I love you, I'm sorry, I'll never do it again. And you know, you want to believe that your partner will never do it again. So you give them another chance and then everything's good for a little while and then it happens again. And then they go through the love bombing phase again. I'm sorry, I'll never do it. And then that turns into years and years and years, you know, before they realize it. So there's just a lot of different reasons why people don't leave. Believe it or not, another big one is pets. Women will not leave because the abuser will want to keep the pets and they love their pets so much. As we all know, I'm a dog mom too. I love my pet. And so they're like, I don't want him to hurt the pet or do anything with my pet. So I will just stay for my pet, or I'll stay for my kids because my kids deserve to have a father. There's a lot of different reasons why women stay. It's not just like, oh, you should just leave. You know, if it were that easy, then everybody would leave and domestic violence wouldn't be an issue. But it's just not that cut and dry, unfortunately. So that's just some of the things that kind of come to my mind first.
Thank you. Very well said. I also just want to put it in the frame, and I'll have a man's voice put it in the frame here, that the most dangerous time in a physically domestic violence relationship is when she tries to leave. Like that is absolutely the most physically dangerous time women get killed.
Yes. Yeah, it's true. Or hurt, severely injured. Or, you know, I've also heard stories of like the abusers going through the kids or hurting the kids because they know that that's going to hurt her more than them physically harming her. So they'll go do something to the kids, or they'll start grooming the kids as far as like, oh, your mom is this, and you know, trying to get them against their mother and things like that, they always go for like the lowest blow that they know is going to hurt her the most, you know? And yes, that is definitely the most dangerous time to leave, which is why if you're listening and you're in this situation, it's really important to have a safety plan when leaving, you know, that way you just kind of have a plan A, B, and C in case plan A doesn't work or B. And you can do that with like calling a domestic violence hotline and getting an advocate, and they can help you create an escape plan.
Thank you. One of the other statistics that I didn't repeat out here was about, and if there is a gun in the home, the likelihood of the someone dying is 500% higher.
Yeah, crazy.
So, and thank you for saying it. And yes, men are not the only domestic abusers. That is true. There are men who are victims of violence, who are victims of domestic abuse, and we are going to stay in the frame that we're in here. So thank you for acknowledging that. And we're going to stay in the frame that we're in.
Of course.
So how did, so you kind of gave us a little bit of background about how And Rise came to be, but what has it meant as it blossoms? Like, what are you doing now to help and support women?
Yeah, so we offer free mental health services to women. So we do offer free counseling for women in Illinois. They do not need to be survivors of trauma or abuse. It could just be any woman that's in need. Maybe she's underinsured or doesn't have money for counseling and wants to try it, or is in need of a new counselor. So we offer that for women in Illinois. And then we offer support groups on different topics of like emotional abuse, sexual abuse, domestic abuse. We have a Spanish only group. We have a teen girl group. And then we have a chronic pain and chronic illness group as well, because a lot of women we work with do struggle with chronic pain and chronic illness due to trauma. And we offer 8 groups per week. A lot of them are virtual. So we serve women nationwide. We get women from all different states and even some from out of the country who do attend our virtual groups. And then we offer career development services. So we help with resumes and mock interviewing skills. And then we do bi-monthly financial education workshops so that women can become financially independent, teaching them about money, how to get out of debt, how to save for emergencies, how to grow your money, just different things like that. That's really important to me based on my financial abuse and also just not being taught about money growing up. So I really want to empower women to just know that they have a lot of power. And, you know, women, I think it's like the percentage is like we have like 80% like market share. Like we are the biggest like purchaser, you know, like in the economy. Yeah. So like, we have a lot of power. So like, I want to let them know that. And then aside from that, we do a lot of events that teach women about like healthy relationships, healthy coping skills, red flags. We do order protection workshops so that women know what their rights are when they're trying to get an order protection. Or if you don't know what an order protection is, it's basically a restraining order. It's a new name for it. We also do custody and child support, workshops too, same thing, so that they can understand what their rights are, especially when fighting, right, an abuser in court for kids and things like that. So yeah, we do a lot of educational workshops, a lot of empowerment workshops, networking. We're doing a lot of really great things, to just really empower women again, to be the best versions of themselves, whether that's personally or professionally.
I love how your face lights up when you talk about all of these different aspects. And the thing that I remember from our first conversation is like, yes, counseling and mental health services and the kind of direct response to trauma was one of the early pieces that got you involved, but it's all the other stuff, all the entrepreneurial skills, all the management skills, all the life skills that I think is really cool that you've packaged that all kind of together so that you offer a whole lot of different things to women.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. I really do. I want to help like anyone that just wants to be a part of our community and get support. And yeah, I just love helping women. Honestly, they're obviously I'm a woman and, you know, I just love supporting them because we still really aren't seen as equals with men in society, unfortunately. You know, we're still kind of fighting the fight to be seen as equals and things like that.
So tell me if you can recall a couple of success stories, what's the kind of stuff that you see? What are the transformations that you see in working with women?
Yes. I love this question because it's so exciting. So we do see a lot of women come in at their worst, right? Some of them have literally just been through a sexual assault that week or the week before. So they like coming in when it's like very raw and very new and they're like processing it. And I've seen them come in like just at their worst. And then little by little, you know, we're giving them resources. We're giving them tips and tricks on how to work through it. Things that they can, again, healthy coping skills, whether that's like somatic healing, yoga, or it can be Reiki. You know, I'm a Reiki master, so we do Reiki and like sound baths, and also teaching them how to journal and how to release. That's the biggest thing with this, is releasing, because a lot of the times we suppress things, and I call it stuffing. I'm like, we stuff it and we stuff it and we stuff it and pretend like it's okay and tell everybody you're good and I'm okay and I'll figure it out and I'll be strong and I'll deal. And then, you know, when we're not dealing with that stuff though, and we're just stuffing it, it will come back in other ways. And that's where the chronic pain and chronic illness comes in. People don't realize that our physical bodies are connected to our emotional minds, right? Like, so when our like mental health isn't right, then it will affect our physical body and vice versa, right? So when, let's just say you had a surgery, and right, you're in pain and you're not feeling good. And you know, then you start to think, oh, I'm not feeling good. And oh, woe is me. You know, so like, that's the same thing. It's like they battle with each other. So a lot of people take care of themselves physically, but not mentally. And it all is intertwined. The mind and body are one. So I think it's important for people to remember that. But anyway, so we're basically teach women all these different ways that they can work through things. And just seeing them transform into like these new people who are empowered, who have boundaries now, who know their worth, right? Who can say no to people because they know that they deserve respect and love, and, you know, teaching them what a healthy relationship does look like, because a lot of these women grew up in unhealthy households. So then that's why they got into these situations, because they didn't know, because it looked familiar, because oh, that's how my dad treated my mom. I didn't know. I thought that everybody treated their parents like, you know, like their parents treated each other like that. So just being able to see them kind of transform is honestly so rewarding. And it's like the best part of what I do. It's so cool to see people really making progress. And a lot of these ladies are just ladies that want to change. They want their lives to be better, just like I did. You know, they want to stop suffering and want to stop being depressed and want to stop feeling crappy. They want to be just fulfilled and happy. I mean, who doesn't, right? I think that's kind of like everybody's hope, is just, they just want to live a happy life. So it's just really, really rewarding to see these ladies put in the work and then seeing that work really pay off, you know?
Nice. Can we talk a little bit about, so you mentioned that you do some Spanish language only groups. Mm-hmm. What have you noticed, witnessed, seen around cultural differences with women who are coming to you?
Yeah, that's a great question too. So there's definitely a lot of stigmas in the Black and Brown communities. And I'm not just talking about like Hispanic and Black. I'm talking about Asian and Middle Eastern and Indian. And like, I've seen so many women from different backgrounds all have kind of the same story around mental health. My family never knew about it, right? Or they always said that it doesn't work, or they always said this. So there's just all these stigmas around it. So I never sought help because I heard that it didn't work. So I just never went. And that's the same thing that happened with me. I grew up hearing the same thing. So that's definitely like, a lot of people are just taught like religious ways, right? Just pray on it. Or, you know, just pray to God, or just read the Bible and it'll solve all your problems. And that might work for like a small percentage of people, but that doesn't solve your trauma. You know, you still have to work through it. You still have to talk about it with a professional. And again, releasing it some type of way. And whether that's religion, that's great. But there are, you know, there are ways to work through it. But yeah, I think a lot of people are also taught untruths about mental health, you know, like, again, same thing, like it doesn't work. So then they never seek help for it because they think it doesn't work. Or they're just taught a lot of different things around it that aren't true. So then when they finally come to like a group, or they finally seek therapy or something like that, they're like, oh my God, I just realized that my mom didn't know what she was talking about, or my dad didn't realize, you know, like they're realizing like all these things are just things that were taught that weren't true. Like just that generational stuff, you know? And I don't think that any of these older generations had like malintent. I just think it was a lack of education around it, and just it wasn't normalized in our cultures to do that type of stuff. So it's just a generational thing. So that's where it's really important to break those cycles and go seek help and get your kids in counseling too. I have my daughter in counseling. Is she struggling with any major mental health issues? No, but she's still, I'm trying to get her into that practice because it's her own way of taking care of herself. It's your self-care. It's, and your self-care is your self-love, right? If you're taking that hour to speak to a professional, that's your way of taking care of yourself for that week. Not for the week, I should say, for the day, let's say. But I don't have major, major things, but I still see somebody every week because it's just important to me. It's important to me to talk to somebody, even if I have nothing major going on. And I think normalizing that is really important for people of color.
There are multiple things in what you just said that I want to jump into. First, I'm going to start just with observation about, yes, I've been doing individual therapy. My kids, same thing. And we've had therapists. Therapy has been like a part of our lives since the get. And group work, which is what you're doing with And Rise, like there's something in the juice with so group work, right? Mm-hmm. There's just something that's so good about being in those spaces and sharing the, so 12 step experience, strength, and hope, right? Mm-hmm. With other people in a group that I think is incredibly powerful.
It's very powerful just because I think the biggest thing is like people see they're not alone. You know, like, wow, there's so many other people struggling with the same exact thing that I thought that I was crazy for thinking or feeling. And, you know, finally getting that validation. Some of these women don't get validation from their friends or their family or even their abuser. So finally hearing somebody say, I believe you, and that should have never happened to you, and I'm sorry, and how can I support you? It's like the most beautiful thing to see, for one. And two, it's so healing for some of these women. Like, it's really just, it changes their life, honestly. Just to have that one person that believes you, or to just, you know, empathizes with you, that like, man, that should have never happened, because it shouldn't have, you know. And I think that's where a lot of healing comes in. And if COVID showed us anything, community, we need community, we need people. And I really think that, especially for women, we really, really are seeking community with other positive women, you know, with that are nice. Yeah. Not mean girls and stuff like that.
Yeah, where it's not just about demonstrating, not about performing. It's about really getting real with one another. Yeah, I love that. And y'all can't see this, but Jennifer has a Peloton machine like right behind her in the frame here. So I just have to say, like, therapy and getting support, you don't go to a yoga class once and decide that you've done yoga and you're done. Right. It's like, it's exercise. It's like anything else. It's something that we have to return to over and over again.
Over and over again. Yes. Even if it's, and I always say this too, even if it's painful, allow yourself to sit in that discomfort instead of trying to push the pain away, because the pain, you know, like, there's a reason that you're feeling pain, and you got to let it process. And once you let it process, once you've allowed yourself to sit with it and process it, then you can move on. But if you're just pretending like, I'm okay, everything's fine, I'm smiling, everything's fine, you know, it's not going to solve anything. So yeah, like, just because you exercise one time doesn't mean you're going to like get to that goal weight of, losing 10 pounds. You got to keep going to the gym or working out to make that happen. And even same thing with healing, you got to keep working at it, right? Positive self-talk and, you know, thinking positively even, because a lot of people come in this like negative mindset or like this victim mentality, which is normal. Don't get me wrong. It is very normal, but that's something that we help them with too, is like, how do I change these negative thoughts or these intrusive thoughts, you know, and like just giving them different ways that they can work through that. And then same thing, you got to keep practicing it. It's not just going to happen. Okay, let me combat these intrusive thoughts just today, and then tomorrow I'll go back to it. Like, no, it doesn't work like that. You have to keep at it. And then you rewire and you reprogram your brain that way. So eventually you will think completely differently. And it's a transformation, but I always say it's not a race, it's a marathon. It takes time to get there, but you know, with you putting in the work into yourself, It's so worth it. So worth
it. Yeah. Thank you. Let's take a couple of minutes to talk about your book. So you published a book, which I'm going to go back up to, Passion, Purpose, and the Pursuit of Dreams. Was it in your plan to become a published author?
Actually, yes. So that book is actually, I'm a co-author on there. So there's a bunch of different people's stories, but there I do talk about like my sexual abuse and what happened and how I got to where I'm at now. And actually I am in the process of writing a book. Like I want to write a memoir about my life, but just way more detail than I did in that book. Because, you know, I have a story. It's really sad. A lot of the things that I've been through, but I also want to share that to show people all the, and not that I was just the only victim. I did things too that weren't great, right? I wasn't always the best version of myself. And I'm very like honest about that and transparent about that, but like also showing them like, but this is where I'm at now. This is all the things that I've done once I figured it all out and started working through my healing and things like that. Like it's more like, here's what came out of all of that stuff, you know, and just letting people know, like, you are the author of your own book, your own story, and it can end however you want it to. That's just up to you. How do you want it to end?
That's excellent. Thank you. Well, I'll look forward to seeing that and learning more about it as you go. And I keep pausing and unpausing my mic here. So dog dad, I spend like some percentage of every day is just opening and closing the door for the dogs to go in and out of the room. And I'm midnight yeah. must be better behaved than my dogs.
She is in my daughter's room because there's been plenty of podcasts where she's like outside barking or making noise. And I'm like, you need to go in there until I'm done with this. So she's probably sleeping.
Good for her. So what would you like? So from the position of entrepreneur, from the position of healer and healed, from the position of, you know, empowerment for women, what do you want men to see and feel and do about domestic violence and what we see going on in our own communities?
Yeah, speak out too, and support women. Don't just act like this is a women's only issue, because again, like I mentioned earlier in the podcast, it affects everybody in society. And remembering that you too have a mother and a daughter and, you know, women in your life that this could happen to. And I would also say too, and it's not just for men, it's for a lot of people, because there's a lot of victim blaming and a lot of stigmas around, you know, trauma and abuse. And when somebody discloses abuse to you, don't ask them questions or like, what were you wearing or what did you do or why don't you just leave? You know, those types of things. Why don't you just say, I'm sorry that happened to you. How can I support you? That's it. That's all you need to say, you know, and sometimes people aren't looking for advice when they're disclosing abuse to you. Sometimes they just need somebody to listen that isn't going to judge them. So if you find somebody disclosing to you, you know, respond that way instead of asking them a bunch of questions, because that makes them feel a lot more shame when you're like, well, you must have done something to make them angry. It doesn't matter how, what they did. Nobody deserves to be abused in any type of way. Another thing too is like, you know, supporting organizations like mine, whether that's donating or volunteering or just sharing it. And, you know, like you just never know. There's a lot of people who suffer in silence out there. And you never know, just by sharing something, like even this podcast, sharing it on your social media, like, hey, there might be a couple of women, you know, on your social media that like really need to hear this podcast. And now they can find an organization like ours that can help them and things like that. So just remembering that this is not just a women problem. It's like a societal problem. And, you know, everybody needs to be concerned about it because the numbers are crazy. Like they're really, I just don't think most people realize how often this happens, and it really shouldn't happen at all.
How common it is in the context of the hidden, it's a hidden pandemic. It's a hidden thing mm-hmm. in so many of our families. Yeah. And it cuts across all economics. It cuts across race. It cuts across class. It cuts across education. It cuts across everything.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. A lot of people don't think that it happens to, like, you know, certain types of people, right? Like rich women and things like that. And we get doctors, we get lawyers, we get the smartest women that will come into our groups, like people you would never expect. And they also like go in there and like, very embarrassed because they're like, I'm a doctor, I should know better. I'm a lawyer, I should be smarter than this. And it's like, it could happen to anybody. You know, you'd be surprised the types of people like that it happens to. And also too, like, something else just came to me. A lot of people think that an abuser looks a certain type of way, maybe big and fat and ugly and scary looking, yes. Right? There's that stigma too, that like, this is what an abuser looks like, but actually they can look just like you, boy. They can just look just like you. Believe it or not, a lot of them are very charming, very intelligent and good looking. And, you know, like we've seen like the, that was that Tinder guy. There was like a Netflix special on it. Anyway, and he was killing girls that he was finding on Tinder, and he was good looking. Like you would never think, but like that's what people also, I think, need to keep in mind, is that all abusers don't look scary. A lot of them look like your everyday, normal, average person, you know? So like another thing to keep in mind.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And I'll just say right to, you know, to me, to looking in the mirror, and to the men who are listening to the podcast, right? So we're talking about a very broad spectrum, right? I want to make, it's all them. It's those bad men who do those bad, horrible things. But then when you reel it all the way back in to the ways in which I use minimizing language, to the ways in which I use shaming, to the ways in which I use emotional manipulation to get what I want, in the ways in which, you know, this is all stuff for us as men to look at and take responsibility for in our relationships.
And also, like, thank you for saying that. And another thing that just came to me was like, not turning a blind eye. If you see something, say something, even if it's your friend or your uncle or your family member, if you see abuse happening right in front of your face, and if you're not helping that person, then you are just like, you're kind of just a silent participant in it. And people don't really want to like see it that way, but it's true, because you could have like said something to maybe stop it or prevent it from happening in the first place. If you're in that like situation, a lot of people are just like, well, that's just how he is. That's always how he's been. Why are you surrounding yourself with an abusive man? Why do you think that that's okay? Or, you know, like, so just speaking up is really, really important too. And that's a great way to be an ally, you know, to women and to survivors.
Thank you. And and cuts across all kinds of relationships. So same-sex relationships, abuse happens in same-sex relationships also. So that.
Yes, it does. Yes.
Thank you. Thank you very much. So I'm going to, there was one other thing that I was going to say. Oh, what I was going to say is I was going to point inside of MKP, inside of the Mankind Project for just a minute. If you are a Mankind Project guy, there is a men's group inside of MKP that meets virtually every month called Ending Violence is Men's Work. That group got started a number of years ago. We did several marches for a place called the Independence House, which is a violence shelter out on Cape Cod. If you want to get involved and do something like that, there are men in MKP who are focused on this mission. So get involved. And yes, it is our responsibility to do something about this. Jennifer, thank you so much for spending this time with me. How should people find you and learn more about And Rise?
Yeah, well, thank you so much for having me. This was fun. And yeah, if you're looking to just learn more about And Rise and what we do, you can visit our website at www.womenrisechicago.org. If you'd like to speak to me directly, you can email me at Jennifer@womenrisechicago.org. Or add us on Instagram. We're at and_rise_. And then TikTok is and_rise_. And then Facebook is Women Rise Chicago.
Great. Look for all of that in the show notes down below. If you go to womenrisechicago.org, there is a newsletter that you can join to get more information and keep track of the organization. And there's a free resource guide that you can sign up for at the bottom of the page. So go get the free resource guide from womenrisechicago.org. Jennifer, thank you.
Thank you so much.
This has been the Mankind Podcast, produced in association with the Mankind Project USA. And I personally want to thank our guests for joining us today and imparting their wisdom from their experiences in this amazing journey called life. Now, the fee for this episode is simple. If you found gold and insights that you believe could benefit your loved ones and those you care about, be sure to share it with them. And of course, remember that life doesn't happen to us. It happens for us, so long as we rip the pen out of fate's hand and become the author of our own story. So my friend, pick up the pen, and we'll see you next week. Lots of love.